This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, with what would have been the assisted voice of goalkeeping in Richard Lee, but he's dropped a shoulder and done one for now. So as things stand, I'm here with ex-QPR and Stoke excellent goalkeeper coach, Mr. David Rouse.
Good afternoon.
How are we?
Very good, thank you.
It's good to have you here. So Rich is here with us, but he's had to step outside for a phone call. He reckons he might come back in for a cameo at some point.
Yeah, he's going to come in at the last minute and sort of save the day, I suppose.
Classic Rich, yes, you might say. Yes. But it was going to be a three ball, so hopefully that will happen eventually. That's why he was going to be assisted. But yeah, you're here. It's great. Tell us what you've been up to, because we did have you on the podcast, of course, about 2 years or so ago, I think it was now.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of goalkeeping between then and now.
There has.
Yeah, so to be fair, I've been just watching lots and lots of goalkeepers, not on the field as much now. So I've come out of club coaching. I'm still doing some coaching with Northern Ireland, with the national team. But the rest of the time, just working as a coach off the field, going out seeing goalkeepers, mentoring them, giving them advice, helping them on the next step in their journeys. It's just an excuse to watch goalkeepers all the time, to be honest.
It's a great job.
Yeah.
It is a great job. We were talking earlier and you were showing me your schedule, your upcoming schedule, and it's just going to football watching goalkeepers.
Yeah, I know. You can't really call it a job. I speak to any of my mates who work in normal jobs, and I'm complaining that I've had to go and watch three games of football in a week. I'm not going to get much. I'm not going to get much sort of sympathy from them, that's for sure.
Well, we are sat in a lovely location, aren't we? Milton Keynes, we are right now in the La Tour Hotel, looking over the grand Milton Keynes backdrop.
Yeah, it is very grand. I'm just thinking, last week I was in Mallorca walking in the mountains, and I'm now at the top of a hotel looking out on Milton Keynes. It's not quite the same vista, to be honest.
No, but it will do a job for now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll do a job. So it's great to have you here. We're going to veer slightly from the regular Between the Sticks, because it was going to be you and Rich too. I thought we could just pick out a few goalkeeping topics from the weekend and just riff on them.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, sure. And first and foremost, before we get on to those topics, you've mentioned something just before we've come in. So I think we'll start with one of these quickly.
Commentary corner.
So it is a commentary corner. We don't always like to start on a negative, but we'll view this as a positive because you are the one that's brought it into the schedule. And Aaron Ramsdale, in the game between West Ham and Arsenal yesterday, the equaliser from Jared Bowen, you took exception to some of the commentary or the punditry.
Yeah. I'm a nightmare because I get really annoyed with what I call lazy punditry when it comes down to goalkeepers. And they'll just have the common thing. So if a goalkeeper gets beaten at the near post, it's their fault. If they get a full hand to it, as with Aaron Ramsdale yesterday, he's got to do better with that. He's not going to be happy with that tomorrow. Now, that might be the case, but it's lazy because they don't follow it up with any evidence. So I looked at that goal from Jared Bowen yesterday, and yes, Ramsdale got a full hand to it. But I then look at, well, why didn't he keep it out? So I look at the strike and the shape from Bowen, as it comes and it's dropping, he hits it down into the ground, and you look, Ramsdale's hands have instinctively started to drop because he's hit it down, but then it bounces up, gets so much speed off the turf that he's then chasing it backwards. And yes, he could have done better with it, but there's a reason why. Because it's bounced up, his hands have dropped and then had to go up, he's ending up chasing it then. But the commentators don't look at that as to why that might happen. It's just a case of, well, he's got a hand to it, he's got to save it. I'm a nightmare for that. I'll be sat watching those games and I'll get angry with the commentators just being lazy.
What could he do better there then?
Listen, it's tough there. I think to just read the strike a little bit better, look at how he's going to hit it into the ground to see that, maybe not let his hands drop as much. But the tough thing there is he's on a distance where, if he's any closer, you'd be starting to drop your hands anyway, because it's going to be difficult for him to be able to lift it. And also the shape of his shot, he's hitting it down. So to try and guess that he's going to hit that ball into the turf and come up is very difficult. all I'd say there is just to be faster with his hands driving to the ball. But I mean, that's being like hyper, you know, hypercritical there. I think you'd only be that sort of critical with him because how quick he is and the speed of his movement and the speed of his hands into saves. But it's just one of those where it's just caught him out because of the bounce, I think.
And that's where there are so many variables that I guess the casual onlooker doesn't take into account, right? Because at that moment in time, Jarrod Bowen can execute a number of different finishes. He can hit it into the ground like he did. He can hit it low and hard without it bouncing into the ground. He can hit it high to that same side. He can hit it low to the opposite side, or he can hit it high to the opposite side, or he hits it towards Aaron Ramsdale. So it's low, central, or high central. So there are so many different outcomes there.
Yeah, and I think that when you go up the leagues and you're talking about the top league in the world, strikers are able to do stuff with the ball that they're not going to be at lower levels. So it's easier lower down to sort of spot something early and have a good idea of what might happen. But when you're playing against these top professionals, you know, they can do things, you know, they can turn on a dime, they can hit the ball inside, outside of the foot. They can do things with the ball where you can't read it. When you're working with goalkeepers, you work on scenarios to try and look at ways where you can read situations. The worst one you can have is ones you can't read, where there's no easy cues before the strike, and I think that's one of those yesterday where it's not as easy to pick up the information before the strike.
Okay, so we'll move on to the first of the topics we are going to discuss. I've named this tip over tete-a-tete. So there were five. You're regretting coming on now, aren't you? I can't believe they wrote me into this. So there were five tip over saves at the weekend. One from Emi Martinez in Aston Villa's win over Newcastle. One from Hugo Lloris in Tottenham's defeat to Bournemouth. David Raya in Brentford's defeat to Wolves. Dan Iverson in Leicester City's defeat to Manchester City. And Kepa Arrizabalaga in Chelsea's defeat to Brighton. So you've seen these before we've come on air. Yep. I'd like you to now go through each one and rate which one is your best, perhaps your 1 to 5, if you can do that.
Yeah, I think for me there, my number one would probably be David Raya. My number two would be Kepa. Number three, Iverson. Number four would be Lloris. And number five would be Martinez. And I've rated those more on difficulty than anything else. I think the one from David Raya, I really like. He's got really fast feet, creates a lot of power to get across, but you can see he's got to get a lot of power and a lot of height to get that ball over the bar. I think there's more pace on that than with the others. I think if you look at, say, from Kepa, it's close in. He's got really fast hands to get his hands up and above him to make that save. And it was something that we were talking on before. I think Kepa's really improved with his hands position. I think people looked at him a lot. Certainly the season before last, where he had a big hand swing. And if you look at now, he's really lost that. And it means that his hands are always in front and he's able to make those reactions and get his hands into positions a lot quicker. So I was impressed with that. I think Iverson's one there. The ball's going away from him. And whereas the other saves from the other keepers are all like top hand saves, he's really had to reach and open out with his right hand on his side, and that's a real stretch. I think Lloris, what I like about that, he's kept really good depth. He's not got down the line of the ball too much, and he's given himself a chance to get a step and drive. And then with Emi's there, he's just gone off one step and made the save there, which is, it's a good save, but probably not as much, not same level of difficulty as the others. But one thing I'd look at all of them, and it's something I look at goalkeepers now, they've all kept good depth. I'd say when I was playing eons ago and when I first started out coaching, you'd be talking about goalkeepers coming up the line and you'd be looking at setting sort of 5 yards out. The ball moves too fast, has too much shape on it now. You've got to be deeper. I think that gives goalkeepers now the size of David Raya, who's not the tallest, but he's got great quick feet. It gives him the chance to be able to be on the same playing level as a 6'5" goalkeeper, because now it's about quick movement. And the thing there, because they've all kept their depth, they've got detail on the hand contacts. So it's not just a case of getting the hand to the ball. You know, they've actually got detail on where they're directing the ball, you know, which hand they're going with, what kind of deflection they're using. The further up the line now, it's just a case of you're just getting your hand to the ball. And then you don't have that detail. It might come back off you into play. But with all of these top keepers now, you'll see them, rather than going up the line of the ball, a lot of them will be dropping to a better reaction position.
You mentioned David Raya there, and you mentioned his height too, which has always been a stickler every time we do a podcast and every time we speak to a goalkeeper coach. It's something that always comes up, is that height for a goalkeeper. He's such a great case study, isn't he, now, for that myth basically being banished?
Yeah, and it is a myth. I mean, one thing, look, I know this was a fact probably a couple of World Cups ago. Here's a couple of questions for you. So how tall was Iker Casillas?
Casillas is, what, 5'10"?
Yeah, maybe 5'11", yeah. Right? Peter Shilton.
Slightly bigger than Casillas, was he not?
Yeah, around about the same. But if you're going to fact check me on this, I'm sure. But up until a couple of World Cups ago, those two goalkeepers had the most clean sheets in World Cup finals. So, and you look at how many international prizes Casillas got at his height. Mm. So playing against top players in the world, with some great players as well in the times when, won the World Cup with Spain and the European Championships, and then all of the trophies obviously with Real Madrid. So I think it is a myth. I think it's good to see goalkeepers in the Premier League now who are not the biggest. But it's not too long ago, you look at Shea Given, 6 foot, top Premier League goalkeeper. It's not about the height. It's about how fast you are and the power into it. I think if you're 6 foot and you haven't got fast feet and you can't generate power, then you're going to struggle at the top end. But if I'm looking at a goalkeeper, if they've got speed, power, and generate that spring, then they'll be able to cope with it.
Okay. I'm not going to fact check you right now, but I do... Part of me thinks that it was broken in the most recent World Cup. I could be wrong, because I think it was short. I think Barthez was in amongst that realm as well.
Yeah, possibly.
But I wouldn't know, so I'm not going to claim that I do. Another name that we just mentioned there in those tip-over tete-a-tete was Kepa. And I personally think we're in for a really interesting period now with Frank Lampard coming back into Chelsea, because it wasn't long ago that Kepa was kind of ostracised, really, as a number one at Chelsea. Caballero was favoured over him for a period. Then Frank obviously brought in Edouard Mendy, who's currently sitting on the bench at Chelsea. I believe the way things tend to go, and when teams are out of form, normally it's the goalkeeper that's looked at first for, okay, let's change something, we'll change the goalkeeper and see if fortunes change. Now that Frank Lampard is back in charge, and I don't know what is going on behind the scenes, Ben Roberts obviously now in at Chelsea, but if you were the goalkeeper coach there now at Chelsea in that situation, knowing that Frank Lampard wasn't initially a big fan of Kepa, what would this situation be?
I think it depends on the strength of you as a goalkeeping coach, because I'm always one to go with the evidence. So if I'm the goalkeeping coach there at Chelsea and I felt that the number one was at fault for the losses, had been letting in soft goals, could have been doing better, and I had the number two chomping at the bit, then I would go to the manager and have that conversation. I don't think that's the case at the minute. And I think it would be tough for Kepa to be dropped. I mean, I don't think he's done much wrong really there. But like you say, it is very easy, and I've seen it loads of times where the team's not performing and it is a very easy change to make, changing the goalkeeper in there. It's always a tough one. And I've always stayed with the evidence. So if a manager's looking to make a change and then, they're going to make a change no matter what, I would always argue the case one way or the other, but go with the evidence. It's never going to be a gut reaction. It's never going to be an emotional thing. I would point out, the facts as they are.
Have you been, you mentioned the change in his game. Have you been impressed with how he's, I mean, do we say improved? Do we say developed? This is a, 27, 28-year-old goalkeeper now.
Yeah, I have, because there was clearly things that people were spotting in his game, but it's not just what people were spotting in the game. He was making mistakes. He was getting beaten too easily. I think the price tag on his head was always going to cause problems, because when you've been transferred to that amount of money, people are expecting you to be faultless. They're going to expect you to be perfect. So as soon as he wasn't, everybody was on his back. which is always tough. But I think the way he's come through that has impressed me more, because it would have been very easy for him to disappear into number two at Chelsea and then see his contract out and then move elsewhere. But the fact is, he has worked on his game. You can see that. He's done really well. He's come back. I think it's been tough this season. I think anybody who's watched Chelsea has been tough. It doesn't matter who's going to play in goals there. It's been a tough season for them. But I think he's come back stronger.
Another goalkeeper who wasn't mentioned in that list but does come into a certain category that we've discussed already is Keylor Navas, who played yesterday for Nottingham Forest. Six saves, kept the score down because it could have been much higher than the 2-0 to Manchester United. This is another interesting situation. Dean Henderson is back in training. Who knows what will happen between now and the end of the season. But both of those goalkeepers, Henderson and Navas, are due to depart Nottingham Forest in the summer. Where are they at in terms of their number one for next season?
Cool, that's a great question. I suppose the first thing is it depends which league they're in, as to what they do. I think it's been great seeing Navas playing in the Premier League. It's good to see goalkeepers you've seen perform brilliantly in European leagues then come into the Premier League and how they do. And it's been great to watch. I think he, like you say, he kept the score down yesterday, but he's been important in a number of games. And when you think over the years, the times where he's been in teams that have been top teams, where he's probably only had to make one or two saves in a game, to come into a team where he's having to make six or seven important saves week in, week out, and he's done that, that impresses me. It's not easy to do that. But as for Forest next season, yeah, I think the main thing is which league they're in. And look, they seem to have an endless pot of money at the minute. So I think they stay in the Premier League. Any top goalkeeper, could be a target for him.
It was a real throwback, you're right there, with Navas coming into the Premier League, because back in the day when you used to watch a World Cup or a Euros on TV and you see these players, they're almost like mythical creatures because we didn't see them every week on our own screens. We didn't have the access to Sky back then. And even if we did, the coverage wasn't too far extended from the Premier League, really, in the EFL. So having a player come into the Premier League or the EFL at that time was so magical, because you suddenly thought, God, it's this guy from further afield that's now, we can now see him. I feel like it was a bit like that with Navas, because he spent pretty much all of his career, of course, away from our shores. And to come here in what is the twilight of his career, I suppose, has been quite exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I remember back in the day when you'd get when Van der Sar came over and started playing with Fulham, and obviously then stepped up to Manchester United, because you wouldn't get to see him. Listen, as a goalkeeping nerd, I'd be watching him, but you wanted to see him week in, week out. You want to turn on Match of the Day and see his work. Same with Pepe Reina when he came into Liverpool. So Keylor Navas is the same kind of thing. It would be nice to see some of the top European goalkeepers maybe coming in earlier at different points. I don't think we have enough international goalkeepers now as we possibly did in the past come in. But in saying that, obviously it gives a chance for the best English goalkeepers to come up and through.
So he's back.
I am.
He's decided to drop in.
A brief cameo. Come and join you boys. It's a lovely venue, by the way. This is the best yet, I think.
Well, we did discuss it.
Yeah. I mean, no expense spared. Is this because we've got Mr. Rouse? Is that what this is?
Special guest, mate. Special place, special guest.
Yeah, there you go.
I've noticed as well, we're all clad in black.
We are.
Yeah, so it's the Lev Yashin.
Yes.
Yeah. The Black Spider.
Black Spider. I'm thinking of some famous... I always think of Barthez when I think of black. The black Man United kit that he had.
Oh, okay. The short sleeves.
Yeah. That was a bit of me.
Neville Southall.
Oh, yeah.
Everton. Black. Yeah, black goalkeeping shirt.
Yeah.
Did you have a favoured type of shirt? To be fair, when we did our quickfire questions... Well, when we did your podcast, we didn't have our quickfire questions, I don't think.
No.
Your favourite kit, did you prefer to wear black?
As long as it had the number one on the back. It was usually 13 or 31 or 27, so I didn't really care, to be honest.
No.
As long as I was playing, yeah.
Speaking of numbers, because there are three of us talking now, we've got Rousey in as number one. He's tuned into the number one channel. I'm in number two, and you're now, quite appropriately, Richard, at number three.
Oh, that's harsh. Yeah. That's harsh. I was more of a number two. That was more my role throughout the career.
Yeah. Mm. You spent some time as a three, though, didn't you?
I did. Are we going to talk about number threes? Because, I mean, we can go into a lot of details on three. I did have a period of time as a three, yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful segue.
Okay, go on.
Because the next topic, I thought, and I don't even know whether this is something we can riff on, whether it even is a topic to discuss, but I noticed at the weekend, and perhaps this has happened before, but at the weekend I noticed that there were four teams who had two goalkeepers on the bench. So we had Areola and Anang on the bench for West Ham. We had Forster and Austin on the bench for Spurs. Butland and Bishop on the bench for United, Manchester United. And Olsen and Sinisalo on the bench for Aston Villa. Do you think, gents, this is something we're going to see more of moving forward? And do you think it's a good thing that the number four is now involved in matchday squads?
I don't really know about this. It's like international football. You have the two goalkeepers on the bench. You know, that's just an automatic. I don't see the need for it. I would always have a third goalkeeper doing the warm up, and I think nearly all teams do that now. But then that third goalkeeper would be up in the stand watching the game. They'd do the warm up, get a shower, and then they'd watch from the stand. I don't know the benefit of having two goalkeepers on the bench.
But you know, I bet there's someone out there that's done the percentage chance. Because the only one I can think of, but actually even this situation that I'm thinking of, what you've suggested there still would have worked, which was the Almunia Bond Bonham game, where Almunia gets injured in the warm-up, Bondy gets injured after 15 minutes, Jack Bonham then ends up playing 75 minutes against Leeds, if I remember rightly. That's the only time I can remember where two goalies have got injured in the same. But I'm right in saying that even if that had happened in the warm-up, then they could have still, well, I think they did on the day, then they promoted Bondy to play and obviously Jack Bonham to then sit on the bench. So I think the likelihood of two goalkeepers getting injured in a game, I can't think of a time where it's ever happened in a single game. So percentage chance, it must be 0.000, whatever it is, you know, of a goalkeeper, a third choice goalkeeper actually coming on in a game.
It's interesting you say you don't know, because I guess the evidence isn't massively there right now, but from the likes of Brandon Austin and Nathan Bishop, will they see that as a positive that they're involved? And is it a positive that they're involved in a matchday squad? They're going through the motions, or is it an unnecessary exercise for them to take part in?
I wouldn't say it's unnecessary. I mean, it's great for the goalkeepers to be, you know, named in the squad and on the bench. But I think for the teams that have done it, I'd love to know their reasoning behind it. Was it because they needed to have a player on the bench, you know, that's the an English-based player or an English homegrown player, or did they not have players that they were happy putting on the bench there? I mean, I'd be quite annoyed if I was an outfield player who would maybe have a chance of getting on the pitch and there was two goalkeepers on the bench. I'd see that as quite a, you know, a bit of a sort of slap in the face there, because the chances are that third goalkeeper is, you know, like we said, a 0.00 chance of ever getting on the field. Whereas, you know, you get two injuries to defenders and, you know, you've got an extra defender on the bench, that player might actually get on the pitch. So I suppose that's one thing there where I'd look at the squad and think, are you going to upset other people there with that decision?
I guess the examples you gave there. So it's strange on the Spurs one, actually, because Brandon's been on the bench a lot recently, obviously with Hugo Lloris being injured. He's been on the bench the whole time. I guess Nathan Bishop probably isn't on the bench as much. So whether they might see that as a, you train well, this is a, you know, a reward, you're going to be walking out with the team, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe. I think the four you named there, it's, I can see it with a couple and maybe not with the other couple.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the next topic, and this is Jason Steele. So did you know about the assist count for Jason Steele? I wasn't aware of this. You know, he bagged an assist, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
How many do you think he has in his career? Assists as a goalkeeper?
Two?
Any advance, Mr. Rouse?
I'm just trying to think of the teams that he's played for. They're direct. I'm going to double that. I'll go four.
Seven.
Wow.
Seven assists.
Wow.
So he bagged six during his time with Middlesbrough. Six assists. And obviously the one extra now with Brighton. And that is more than twice as many as any other goalkeeper in the Premier League and the Championship since 2010. It's mad,
that
isn't
is,
it?
That is correct. That's huge, yeah. I mean, I don't think I ever had one, genuinely. I cannot remember. I'd have remembered that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I think it would have been mentioned on this podcast. But I, the reason I bring it up is because of the situation at the moment. Obviously, Robert Sanchez coming in at the weekend because Jason Steele has a knock, which is quite gutting for him, I suppose. He's finally got his break in the side. But I just wanted to read out some more quotes from Robert De Zerbi, the Brighton manager, where he said, "For me, for our style, I don't know if there is another keeper in Europe so good, so smart to understand the line pass, to understand the opponent's pressure, and he is playing fantastically. I'm very, very happy." That was De Zerbi on Jason Steele. I was looking into some stats. It was actually a really good article on Sky Sports, and it proved that Steele makes more under pressure passes per 90 minutes than any other goalkeeper in the Premier League. So the evidence, which is a word we keep using, is actually there for Steele to be promoted over Robert Sanchez, because I believe that Sanchez is actually, when it comes to those under pressure passes, at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, and you see that with teams that play from patterns and look to play to go round the press and play the dangerous pass through the press into a six dropping down into the pocket. If you're training on that week in, week out, and you're the number two goalkeeper, you're under pressure to be doing that. But what you're not under the game pressure, I should say. But when you get the chance, you know that's what the manager wants, and you're going to follow that out to the letter. And I would imagine, like, you know, De Zerbi sort of said, this is how we're going to play. You know, it's like Pep kind of thing. We're going to play out no matter what, and you've got to play out like this. So that kind of takes away a little bit of the fear from playing that pass. And, you know, he's been following that to the letter. I think the interesting thing will be is the longer he's in the, you know, obviously he's out now, but the longer you're in the team there is, do you revert to being safe again, or do you keep playing that dangerous pass? You know, you need to have that manager that's going to back you when it doesn't go right, when it gets picked off, particularly if it leads to a goal. But that's the thing now, for Sanchez now, he's going to have to come in and play that style, and he's going to have to do that because, you know, suddenly then he becomes the second choice because he's not doing, you know, that pattern of play.
Mm. Yeah, he's number one, and deservedly so.
Do we play a tumbleweed soundbite? Is that what we do?
I've been waiting for like 2 minutes to say that.
Well, this is the problem now, Richard, with your... The reason a quip is a quip, now I don't know whether you've seen the film Shallow Hal, but he makes a point of this. A quip, you get 2 seconds, five tops. Mm. You can't wait, because then it becomes a slope. Like, it's a quip for a reason. You can't wait for someone to finish talking and then deliver the nonsense punchline.
I thought it was quite good.
Okay, anything constructive to add?
I wasn't
to
even
this
listening
debate
to what he was saying in that moment. No, I was listening. And the whole situation I find really interesting there anyway, because of the fact Robert Sanchez, and again, it's where we talk about it a lot. Certain goalkeepers obviously fit certain styles. Robert Sanchez, until he came out of the team, and even now, is getting linked with some of the biggest teams in Europe. And yet, and this way, you've got to give huge credit to Jason Steele, certainly based on previous experience. We did have a bit of a tough time. But again, it goes back to the idea that you find the right goalkeeper for the right environment. And as Rousey said, where you've got a manager that backs you, and he knows, in terms of his super strength as a goalkeeper, he knows that he fits that Brighton team. And this is a goalkeeper that, and again, it's a great lesson for young goalkeepers listening in, where just if your face doesn't fit in one place doesn't mean it might not fit higher up, you know. So let's be honest, I think he was, Sunderland got relegated, didn't they, if I'm right in saying the season, and he was getting a lot of stick, I do remember. But now, yeah, he's firmly establishing himself, and he's getting plaudits every week. And there you go, this was a keeper that was deemed, you know, a League One goalkeeper, you could argue, a few years ago. And all of a sudden now, yeah, he's really cementing that place as number one.
Okay, and the final point before you rush off, Richard, is just, this was sent in by a listener who wanted to make a point of the fact that this was last weekend, actually, the first game that Leicester City had without former manager Brendan Rodgers. So taking charge was Mike Stowell and Adam Sadler, both former goalkeepers. Now, there was a discussion on Gillette Soccer Saturday between Jeff Stelling and Clinton Morrison. They lost the game, Leicester, last weekend to Bournemouth, I think it was, wasn't it? And the justification from Stelling and Morrison as to why they lost that game was because Sadler and Stowell were both former goalkeepers. Because how on earth could they instruct a group of outfielders to play a game of football?
Do you know what? That's fine. And again, it goes back to opinion. But then the reverse, what we've been saying, I guess, on this pod for the last few years is, yet outfield pundits, outfield people happily pass judgment on goalkeepers. So it's almost, for me, you can't have it both ways, in that, okay, you don't feel that two ex-goalkeepers can lead a team, don't know football, outfield football, maybe as intricately as maybe some outfield ex-players might do. But then, yeah, at the same time, they'll happily pass judgment, or a lot of pundits will happily pass judgment on goalkeepers. So, yeah, look, I don't mind it as an opinion, in the same way that we have our opinion when it comes to goalkeepers, and solely goalkeepers.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a throwaway comment from the pair of them, to be honest. You know, it's there's been some successful goalkeeping managers over the years, but...
There's one in the Premier League right now in Lopetegui. He was a goalkeeper, wasn't he?
Yeah, and you had Nuno Espirito Santos before. I think the most successful would have been the Marseille manager back in 1990s. That's another one to fact check. But yeah. But there's been a few failed ones as well. So, but yeah, it's just a throwaway comment, I think. It's like, you know, they'll always say something about goalkeepers, but it's nice if you've got a goalkeeper on the panel there to actually be able to fight back that argument, I suppose.
Did you ever feel it when you were at a club that there was a perception you didn't know about outfielders?
Yeah, I think that's back in the day, yeah. I think it's changed a lot more now, because goalkeepers will get involved much more in the discussions of the team play. And I think the more experienced you are, the more games that you've been coaching, people actually will listen to your opinion. You know, it's not just about, you know, you just stick with the goalkeepers. I think also as well, modern managers want more from their staff. You know, as a goalkeeping coach, you can't just go and hide in the corner with the goalkeepers. You've got to add more than that. You know, they need more from their team of staff to solve the problems from the whole team.
Okay, gents, this has been lovely, short and sweet.
Mm.
Gerard Gilly, is that the Marseille manager?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. I've looked it up. It's not something.
Normally your 90s knowledge is pretty good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But that one I didn't know, as there was one earlier that I didn't know either. Really? So I fessed up, mate. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. You told people about your marathon today, by the way. Have I missed that part of the show?
No, we haven't. We haven't talked about that, no.
Can I mention it? Because... I'm really impressed. Like, just so everyone knows, you ran the Manchester Marathon.
I did, yes.
Yeah, You're feeling it a bit today.
I am feeling it, yes, quite a lot. You're going to do your quip again. I'm going to say, oh, my quads are hurting. And you're going to go, oh, my gosh, you didn't realise you had quads.
Well, I can't now. You just said it. I thought it was quite good.
Yes, it was very enjoyable. You had to delve deep within the reserves of your mental toughness, I think, to run a marathon.
Mm.
Very tough. Of course, we have an experienced marathon runner right here in our company.
Well, experienced, I've only done one more than you. That counts as experienced, but yeah.
The question is, did you listen to Goalkeepers Union podcast while you were running?
So, that in a lot of my training, I did. Okay. Yes, I did listen to some of our past episodes, but my headphones, and this was the really tough thing about the marathon, is that I decided to key in my headphones about halfway through, because I wanted to get through the first 10 miles just... on my own, because of the support that's around as well. You can kind of do that. You actually lose, I'd say, the first 5 to 10K you lose, because it's such a euphoric kind of passage through the opening stages that you're not actually thinking about running. Then you're going through the town and everybody's cheering you on. So you just kind of run freely. So then I thought, do you know what? I'm going to key in my headphones about halfway through. I had podcasts lined up. I had WhatsApp voice notes that I'd stored from friends, because I thought that would just take my mind off the repetitive bouncing off the concrete. And I had a playlist lined up. And about 5 minutes into the first WhatsApp voice note, for some reason, the headphones just stopped working.
Buy cheap, buy twice.
Very expensive headphones, actually. And I don't know why they stopped working. But miraculously, with about 3 miles left, they came back to life. So I was able to get the last 3 miles. But for that period, from about 60 miles to 23 miles, I had nothing. And there were some dark moments, some really, really dark moments. But yes, I got through it aching a bit today, but thoroughly enjoyed it. And we should mention, while you're on air, Mr. Rouse, that you are taking on a challenge. Just tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm doing the Jurassic Coast 100-kilometre challenge, the charity I work with, which is Reverse Ret. So if anybody wants to sponsor me, please, it's on my Instagram bio. But yeah, there's a team of us doing that, 100Ks. We start on Saturday the 13th, and hopefully finish on Sunday the 14th. But yeah, it's going to be a tough challenge, but there's about 20 of us doing it, a real team effort. So it's going to be very enjoyable, I'm sure.
Excellent. And Reverse Ret, they can find the details on your Instagram.
Yes, okay.
Your Instagram is?
David Rouse 921.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any reason for the 921?
No, I think that was the only one that I could get at the time.
The 920 other David Rouses had just
swept
in. Yeah,
I think I tried every other thing, but I have got my blue tick now. So it's, you know, that's nice.
So you got a blue tick? I've got a blue tick. Have you?
Don't do social media, do I? So it's not a problem.
This is the thing. My daughter only sees fame as being judged by social media. So doesn't matter if I've coached famous goalkeepers, or I've been on the pitch, I've been on TV, nothing mattered. But when I got that blue tick, oh my God, you know, suddenly I'm famous. And to me, it doesn't mean anything. I literally use my Instagram to talk about goalkeepers and about raising money, and that's it. Oh, and golf. But for her, it's everything.
Okay, gents, good stuff. Thank you for this. I'm going to get a collective away. Are we on board with that?
Let's do it.
Yes. This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.